Welcome. This is the fourth lecture of our deep reinforcement learning. Are there any questions at the beginning? Nope, doesn't seem so. Everybody knows everything, understands everything. It seems. That's the truth. Okay. Without further ado, let's get to the lecture. We discussed the temporal difference algorithms on the last course, and we talked about quite a lot of possibilities, whether it's on policy or off policy, and how many steps we use to estimate the return from, and also, how do we estimate the value function, whether we use, we sample the actions, or whether we just go through all possible actions as in expected SARSA, and so on and so on. Now, it's time for us to actually start using some function approximation. And by that, I mean that up until now, we have used just tables or matrices for estimating the VS value function, or Q as a action value function. However, first disadvantage is that we can only have a finite number of states and actions, and we also do not share any information between the states and actions. So if we were estimating Q for, I don't know, this position where the pole in the cardpole assignment is nearly in the correct position and some action. And then when we are estimating the position, which is very similar, but just slightly more tilted to the left, then we don't really share any information between these two estimates, right? And both of these are quite impractical. It's impractical, we will improve it. Until now, that's everything what we could do. Also, we use this. Yes. Nothing. We use this Q estimates if we do not have the access to the environment, right? So it's a model-free method. If we do, then it's usually better to estimate just the value functions because there is usually substantially less of them, and then choose the actions not just simply by argmaxing this action value function, but looking at what one action will give us on average, meaning we will consider all possible actions, look out what the rewards will we get. That's exactly what the model we need for, and then looking at the value function of the resulting state. Yeah. So the methods which we described differ in several aspects. One is whether they use the whole episode to get the estimate of the return, or whether they use bootstrapping, so that they just perform some number of steps and then take the V or Q estimate, tell us what the return is probably of the rest of the episodes. And these bootstrapping methods, temporal different methods, they are more noisy and they are more unstable, but they can learn immediately and also explicitly model the fact that we are using this Markovian model of the environment. So that's one way how the algorithms differ, whether they use the full return or estimated from the V or Q function. Then whether we do things on policy or off policy, right? Whether we generate the experience by the same policy which we are interested in finding or estimating. Once again, the off-policy method are more noisy and more unstable, but more flexible, meaning they allow us to describe the optimum behavior, even if we use more exploratory behavior during the training. And In the function approximation, we won't store these V and Q estimates as tables. Instead, we will use some non-trivial model to compute them. So we will use some weight vector, weights W, let's say D, real weights, and we will parameterize our value and Q estimates. We will denote them like this, so it will be V hat or Q hat, and they are parameterized by the weights. These weights, they will be usually shared among states, right? That's what will allow us to actually share some knowledge between the states. However, this means it's that it's not obvious. Yes, definitely. No, this is not really connected to the policy. This is just for the estimates. So previously we had, for example, in Monte Carlo, we had a table, and there for each state and action, we knew what the expected return was. Now, instead of having a table, we can have linear regression model, which will, given state and action, will give us the estimates, but the rest will be the same. So the policy can still be for example, the greedy one, right? So we can still find the policy by finding what best action is there. But this time we will use our estimate Q hat instead of looking in the table. But other than that, things will at least still be the same as before. You're welcome. Great. So we have got these updated estimates. And the thing is, before, all these individual values, they were independent. So whenever we updated this estimate, all the other ones were just being the same. However, now when we use this parameterized model, changing the estimate in one state will probably influence also the estimates by in other states, right? We share them among the states. So when we want to define the minimum, when we want to say what are we converging to, or what do we want to find, we need somehow to specify which states are going to be more important or the less important to us, right? Because if we give preference to some of the states, then we can make the estimation more exact in these states while being worse in some other states. So for whatever optimum which we will want to find, we will need to know a distribution over the states to tell us which states do we care about the most. Of course, we can make the state distribution to be uniform, and then every state will be as important as every other one. But if you consider, for example, our card poll assignment, then maybe for some of the states, we want the model to be more precise than in some other ones. And this can be expressed by this state distribution mu. Once we have a state distribution, then we can easily arrive at an objective, which is called mean squared value error, and it's denoted as VE hat. And this objective is like a loss or error function, right? If we give it some weights, some parameters, it tells us what the expectation of the squared value error is, right? So that's where the name comes from. Mean means it's just the expectation when we take the state from this mu, and it's the expectation of the squared, so something will be squared, and value error is the error in the prediction. So this V pi S, that's the true the value of this policy, and this V hat, that's our approximation. And this is the natural, huh? Yes, definitely. Generally, at this point, it can be arbitrary. Like we can define this for any state distribution, but of course, in practice, we will talk about some specific distribution. So usually for on-policy algorithms, this distribution is just the so-called on-policy distribution, which is the fraction of time which we spent in S. So as you said, normally we use a distribution which depends on the policy by considering the states where we spend more time, more than the states which we don't spend time in. Like the idea is that if the policy is good, then we are visiting the states which are somehow preferable, and in these states we need to be able to behave correctly. I have a full slide prepared on this. So this on-policy distribution is a bit different in the episodic and in the continuing in the episodic settings or for continuing tasks. For continuing tasks, this is usually we just use the stationary distribution. Like stationary distribution is a distribution which doesn't change after one step of the environment, so that if such a distribution exists, the probability of some state should be equal to the probability of getting to that state after one step. So we can consider like the previous states as prime and their probability, and then considering the fact it's how likely is to actually get to this state S, right? So we start in S prime, and then we are performing the action A, which has the probability of pi A given S prime, and this P tells us what is the chance that the whole MDP will move to that state, right? So for these continuing tasks, we use this stationary distribution. The stationary distribution doesn't need to exist. It depends on what properties does this matrix actually have. But there are some things, proofs, like if this Markov chain is aperiodic and irreducible, then it exists. But like generally in practice, we will use this on-policy distribution, this fraction of time we spend in S. I am describing here like how we can get to this distribution analytically or something. But when we train the algorithms, what we do is we just simulate the episodes and we care about the states which we visit more often, right? So in a sense, this on-policy distribution always exists somehow, and we can estimate it by just really starting in some state and then performing actions in the environment. And now analytically, we can actually describe these distributions if it is of interest to us. However, even if this equation doesn't have a solution, doesn't mean we don't have any distribution which we can use. Well, we have it, and it's the one which we can like get by just simulating very many interactions with the environment. Yep. So this on-policy distribution for the episodic tasks, it's slightly more complex, because we also need to care about the probability that an episode starts in a given state S, right? For the continuing tasks, the idea is that, the task just goes on and on, so we only care about the stationary distribution independent on the initial conditions. But for the episodic tasks, the initial conditions can be important enough to influence the on-policy distribution. Right. In order to account for this, let HS be the distribution of the initial states. And then the eta S, do you say eta or eta in English? I don't know. Eta sounds better. If you know, then tell me. Otherwise, I'm just going with eta. And so let's eta s denote the number of time steps which we on average spend in s, right? So it's not the probability right now, it's the number of times so we are there. And we can say that this number of spent on average in the given state, well, either we started in the state or we got to the state from some previous state. So the HS tells us the probability that we actually start there, and then to see how likely or how many times do we get to the state S from the S prime, we can use the same thing as before. So we start with S prime, but this time it's not a distribution, but then average number of times we get to S prime in the episode, and then we do the step, right? So this is the probability of actually arriving at state S. And then the on-policy distribution can be obtained from this eta by normalizing. So we normalize the eta S by the sum of the, this sum, that's the average length of an episode, right? Because this is how much time do we spend in every state in a single episode. So this is the average length of an episode. And now the interesting thing that if there is some discounting, then we can treat it as a form of termination. We didn't really talk about this yet, but we will see this idea in the future several times. Like when we compute the return by computing the discounted rewards, right, like this. Either we can just say, okay, by definition, we just use the this return, or we can look at it differently. We can imagine that the environment has a built-in termination, meaning with the probability of gamma, the environment can say, I want to stop. So you get an original MDP and you can do an augmented MDP where each interaction has a probability of gamma or of one minus gamma, sorry, the probability of one minus gamma of actually going to the terminal state, right? And if you embed this termination to the environment, then you can consider the return to be just sum of the rewards, because with some probability, instead of obtaining R1, we would terminate. And when you look at it like this, then if there is discounting, we can actually add the gamma to this right term, right? So that when you are in the previous state as prime, there is only some chance, there's only a gamma chance that you will not stop and continue with the state S. Yep. So this is with respect to the on-policy distribution, which we usually use. So generally we could use anything, but we usually use the on-policy distribution when we minimize this mean squared variable. So then when we, if we want to learn a good approximation, we can just minimize the mean squared value error. And usually we will do that by using some gradient methods, which means we use this value error as the loss, and then we update the weights by subtracting a learning rate times the gradient. And what the gradient looks like, well, the gradient is the difference, the error which we made, the real value function minus our estimation, and times the gradient of our model with respect to the weights, right? This is just a plain SGD. And this real value function, which we normally don't have, need to be estimated somehow. So in Monte Carlo methods, we just use the episodic return, and in the temporal different methods, we just use bootstrapping. And for example, in case of one-step bootstrapping, we would use one reward and then gamma times the estimate for the next state. So this is not that much different. So we can formulate here an algorithm. This time it's Monte Carlo one for just doing policy evaluation. right? So we are not really, at this point, we are only trying to improve our estimates, and we just do it by minimizing the mean squared value error. You can see that this on-policy distribution doesn't really appear anywhere here, but it's embedded in a way how we generate the states, right? These states, when you consider one of these states, it's actually, you can consider it to be sampled from this on-policy distribution, right? And because, so when we compute the loss, we these states which we use to do the update, they are sampled with this from this distribution. So the loss which we are minimizing is actually the one which samples this S from this mu, and here is the mean square error, or just the square error. So this was why we talked about this on-policy distribution so much, like we need some, but in practice we don't deal with it explicitly. But by the way, how we generate the episodes, we are generating some states more often and some states less often. And this, of course, influences the results. If we would sample the states in some different way, then we would be optimizing a different objective. So the one objective which we use, or this specific distribution, this on-policy distribution, it's not like that it's obvious that this is the great one, but this is the one which is the most practical, because that's how we generate the states automatically. Yep. Very simple, but the simplest probably case of function approximation are the so-called linear methods. So this V is just a linear regression, so that when we get a state S, we represent it using some features which are denoted XS, and we have some weights which correspond to these features. Yep. And the SGD then looks like this. The only difference is that here we have computed the gradient explicitly. So instead of saying the general gradient of this V hat, we just say, okay, the features for the state ST. So this is all quite straightforward. And by the way, know that this is the same as previously, as in the tabular methods. If this representation of a state is just one hot representation, right? So we can get to the previous methods by saying, okay, so when we want to represent the state S, we just use the one hot representation, which means we will have an independent weight for each of the states, which is exactly what we did until now, right? We had one value for a given state. And then this update is exactly what we did, right? This is the error, and this is the vector of lot of zeros and one, just for the state in question, which means only one of these weights will be updated, just the ones belonging to the current state. So this is just the same as we did before. We would say Vs is Vs plus this. However, if we use some other feature vector for the given state, we can get to some different results. So I don't know, a very simple and stupid way how to construct a feature vector would be a state aggregation where some several neighboring states are grouped together. So there is a simple example here. Consider a 1000 state random walk. So we have considered many of these random walks. So this times there is 1000 states. And the transitions, they lead uniformly to 100 states to the left and 100 states to the right. All of these are possible. And you terminate when you get to the left or to the right. And you get minus one on the left side and plus one on the right side. So instead of estimating all these 1000 values, we could just create weights for each 100 of states. So we could create 10 groups and then say, okay, the value of every group is just one. That's what we did with the practical assignments, right? For the for the mountain car or for the card pole. I just generated these discrete states from the real ones, right? So we have actually created one weight for the whole range of the various real observations. So we have actually did this already. When we use the Monte Carlo policy evaluation, you can see that, for example, here in this first group, the estimate of the group, that's the blue line, is not here in the middle, as you might expect. It's slightly more to the right. And the reason is that we don't just compute the average of the estimates of the states, but we compute the average weighted by the on-policy distribution. And because the states here are more probable than the states on the left, this changes the estimate to be slightly more than just the average, right? This would be the average, and you can see that this is slightly more. This bias gets smaller and smaller in the middle, and then it gets larger and larger again. And here, the estimate is really like underestimated once again because the difference between the probabilities of the states inside the group gets higher. So this is this state aggregation is just a straightforward approach. Of course, there have been many methods developed in the past. We could use some polynomial feature functions. We could use Fourier bases, radial basis functions, like all this, which you know from other machine learning methods, or things like talent coding and so on and so on. Of course, nowadays, we don't usually construct the features manually. Instead, we just use the deep neural networks to construct the suitable feature vectors for us automatically as the latent variable, right? So I don't know if you've got the state is an image, you apply some number, employ some number of convolution layers, and then you can consider the all but last hidden layer to be the representation of the state. And then we are just doing the linear method for the for estimating the value of the state. So this is like straightforward machine learning slash deep machine learning stuff. So I'm not talking much about it anymore, except for this tile coding part. That's something what, or at least I don't teach it on my machine learning courses. So when you want to do state aggregation, the problem of the state aggregation is that you get some non smooth transitions, like when all these states get the same weight, then the behavior of the estimation can change wildly, even when you just move a bit. So the approximation is not really smooth because of the different behavior at the boundaries. And the tile coding is a simple way how to improve the situation. And in tile coding, you don't create just disjoint groups, but instead you create several disjoint groups. You create like several tilings, and each point gets represented by one tile in each of these tilings. So in the state aggregation, usually a state is represented just by one weight. But when we use tile coding, I don't know, when we use, for example, four tiles, as in the picture, we represent each state by four weights, which corresponds to the tiles on different layers. And these tiles, or these tilings, they are offset to each other. So one specific point is actually represented using some number of tiles. And the good thing about that, let me show the images first, is that these non-smooth transitions tend to go away. Because when you move a bit, then most of the tiles are still the same. The only thing which is changed is like one of these tiles where you are at the board, then you move, then one of these tiles is moved, but most of them stay the same. So such a model is much more smooth. And you know like exactly where you are actually inside even the individual dials. One thing which is important is that if you use these multiple layers, then they should have some asymmetrical offsets with regarding to each other. If you use just the natural offsets which you would expect, I don't know, +1, +1, +2, +2, +3, +3 or something, then you can look that you can see that the tiles belonging to a given point looks a bit weird, right? If you would use 8 tiles, then there are various combinations in which tiles belong together, and these just don't look right, right? While if you use some asymmetrical offsets, then it seems much more uniform in all the cases. One of the possible offsets which have been proposed was this 1 in one axis, 3 in another axis, 5 in another axis, and so on and so on. And in practice, it seems it works reasonably well. When we are using multiple tiles, that means we are updating multiple weights during one SGD update. So usually the learning rate is normalized to account for the fact that you have multiple tiles. Yes, definitely. Yes, definitely, definitely it would. This way you just get like the indices of the tiles which you intersect with, but you can easily you could easily get weights for the individual tiles by using some distance probably or something. So that definitely would be possible as well. I haven't seen it anywhere like implemented, but that doesn't mean anything, right? Like doing this manually is really very little work. So great. I actually didn't know that people are using it. Well, it seems like an obvious trick, but yeah, I don't really work this much with the images, so I haven't seen it used in other domains than here, I have to say. Yeah, I thank you for the comment. Yeah. Well, it's not a surprise that using this, the tile coding is better than just using the state aggregation. So there is a graph showing you that on the random random walk example, you can get better approximation. Surprise, surprise. So I'm showing to you that because we are going to use it in the assignments, actually. And the good thing about this method that it's something on the border of the tabular methods and the real functional approximation. Like if you still like your tabular methods, this allows you to combine, like to still use tables for the individual tiles, but instead of just taking one state, you combine multiple, like one weight for states, you can get multiple weights for states, and you explicitly share them among the states. And you will see that in practice, it will make a reasonably good difference. So when we use it for the mountain car, I will want you to get below 110 instead of 150. And it will actually be easier to get below 110 using this tile encoding than it was with the Q-learning, for example. Yes, Yes, that's exactly what I mean by this comment. Like, if we just use one hot encoding of the states, then we are exactly back where we was before, right? We have independent estimates for each state, which don't influence each other in any way. You're welcome. With the good thing of the tile encoding is that you share some information in a reasonable way among the states. It's still very crude, and you share things really locally. But it's not surprising that if you use, I don't know, 8 layers or something of this, that you can get much better estimates than before. After some time, we will get rid of this completely, and we will just use the real values on the inputs. Okay, when we have stuff to talk about, it's, I don't know, for example, when you consider this mountain car environment, then the observations which we have are the x and the x velocity. So one thing which you could say, okay, so let's just get rid of all these one-hot encodings and just create a network which will just get the x and the velocity, and it will produce the expected reward, like the value function, for example. And we will just really use this x as the input and the velocity as the input, and that will be it. And when we do it like this, then you will find out that the Q learning algorithm with this approximation will never converge, actually. The problem is that if the function approximation would be implemented like that, then changing the value in one state would completely change the estimate in all other states. So in a sense, we would not be really able to memorize things which would be specific for a given state, right? So we were able to solve this environment because when we were like going at the bottom of the hill, we were accumulating these negative rewards, right? So if we visited some state many, many times, our estimate for it went down, and that motivated the agent to reach higher, to go to the places where the estimate is not as slow. However, for this to work, we need to be able to have memory which is at least a bit independent for the state. If we just take the x as the input to the neural network and the velocity as the input to the neural network and then generate some number of hidden layers, then we would never be able to do so, because if we change the estimate in this state, it would also change the estimate in a very neighboring state to be nearly similar. However, this will not allow the algorithm to observe this effect that these states actually have higher estimates, because they will be dragged down by decreasing the estimates also in the neighboring states. So in many environments, we actually want to have some kind of memory, which is so some independence between various states. And one-hot encoding is a great way how to achieve that. And this tile encoding is like the tile encoding is like n-hot encoding on steroids, right? Instead of one-hot encoding, we have fixed number of ones, the number of tiles, in a way that neighboring or similar states have similar ones, like they intersect in similar features. But it still allows us to have completely independent estimates at the length of the tile. And for some environments, it's still important to have this property. So, for example, for the card pole, we don't need this. So it's fine to compute things just from the state itself. But here in the mountain car, the environment is a bit different. We solve it in a different way by like seeing that some of these states are bad, and we try to reach for the good ones. And for that, we need some independent estimates. And for that, using tile encoding is still reasonable, a good thing. Yep. Definitely. No. Well, generally, the policy improvement theorems only work if we do the policy evaluation fully. So even for the generalized policy iteration, even for our Monte Carlo, it cannot be proven that it works, and it might even not work. As far as I know, even like doing Monte Carlo, so doing sampling one episode and then updating the estimates, then it's not really guaranteed that this will converge. So it will less like it's even more difficult to prove that it will work in these settings where we have no guarantees of some independence for estimates for various states. So generally, we won't be able to prove anything. People try to prove that at least the policy evaluation works. We will talk about the algorithms in the future. And when I say Monte Carlo converges, I mean that the policy evaluation would converge if performed infinitely many times. And the same for the TD. The temporal difference methods, if we perform policy evaluation using them, they would converge. But if we start alternating between the policy evolution and the policy improvement, then there are no guarantees or very little guarantees. In the reinforcement learning book, they refer to one paper with some results. So there are some theoretical results of some specific Monte Carlo with exploring starts and some specific distribution which we use to sample states. But they also show some negative results. I can add the links to the lecture. So we will not really have any guarantee. And you will, during today's lecture, you will see that it will even become worse. We will even discuss situations where even like the algorithms will provably diverge. With the SGD, right? If we are doing this Monte Carlo evaluation, let me go back this one. Right? So what we know, or what could be probably proven, I think it should be, that if we repeat this algorithm, we will actually find a local minimum of this mean square value error function. Right, so in a sense, this doesn't mean that our estimates are optimal, because well, they might not be optimal if we have a linear model. But what we know is that we can at least minimize this error. We can do it if we just do the policy evaluation. If we start alternating this with a policy improvement, then ideally we would of course like to prove that we can converge to a policy which would have highest return or something, but we cannot really prove anything. So the time of proofs has nearly ended from the point that we cannot prove much. So now prepare to some more situations where things will not converge. In the temporal different methods, we once again estimate the value function of the state by doing one step and then estimating the value function of the next state, right? So we can say, okay, this is our gradient just for policy evaluation again. So we are generating the episode, which means the states are actually from this on policy distribution. And then we do the update using the regular update. So this is our estimate of the return. This is what the network actually thinks, or what the model actually thinks. So this is the error in our estimate, and this is the gradient. Now, these things, this algorithm is called semi-gradient. So why is this semi here? Well, it's semi because when you look at it, then it doesn't really backpropagate through this term. right? It backpropagates in a sense through this term because that's what this gradient here is. But there is this part of the network, there are the parameters there, but we don't really consider what effect it will have of changing the weights on this estimate. In a sense, it's a good way. We want to do it like this. We use this as the estimate of the episode. So we hope that this gives us the estimate of what rewards we would get if you just continue with the episode. We don't want to train the network to actually optimize this, right? Instead, we try to use it as probably biased, but still an estimate to the end of the episode. However, it means that this update is not really an SGD update. And that's why this name semi-gradient, because this is not an instance of a gradient descent. What I mean exactly is that there is actually no function J for which this would be its corresponding SGD update. And that's actually important because it means that we cannot even guarantee convergence, right? Nowadays, we take it like a mathematical, that's an SGD, it converges, right? That took some proving. And here we cannot rely on the whole infrastructure of using the gradient descent. So why is this not really any SGD update? Well, if there would be some function J, then this would be the gradient of it, right? So let's consider just the linear approximation. We will show that even for the linear approximation, this is not an SGD update, and it would be even worse for even more advanced models, but with this linear model, the proof is the shortest. So it looks like this. We just take the features, multiply them by the weights. And now if such a J would exist, then this would be the gradient. So for one specific weight, the partial derivative would look like this. It would be this whole value. And then from the gradient, we will just use one specific partial derivative for wi, and the derivative is just the ith feature, right? So it's just ith feature of the state st. And now we will consider second derivatives. And the second derivatives should be the same independently on the order in which we have performed them. Like if the J would exist, then this would be the truth. However, we will show that these derivatives are not the same, which is a contradiction, and such a J doesn't really exist. And now in order to look at the second derivatives, then here we start with the derivative with respect to Wj, and we compute the derivative with respect to Wi. So what is there to compute the derivative of? Well, this and this. Right, so derivative of this part is the ith feature of the state st, and the derivative of this part is the ith feature of the state st plus one, which means that in the end we have this part here on the right, which is symmetrical, ith and jth feature of the state st. That's fine, that's the part which we backpropagated through, but this part for which we don't have the gradient here in the update, well, that will be the problematic one, because here we have the ith feature of the state st plus one and jth feature of the state st, and when we do it in the opposite order, we get this ith and j swapped, but these states, they didn't swap, right? So generally, if the ith feature of the state st plus one is not the same as any of these three features, and that can easily be so, then this is really the problem. So these methods, they are just called semi-gradient because they are not any SGDs. And for linear semi-gradient, just for the simplest case, it can be proven separately that this update actually converges. There is a proof in the reinforcement learning book if you are interested. However, it doesn't converge to the minimum of the mean squared value error. It converges to a different fixed point. So it converging doesn't really mean that it will converge to even a local minimum. It will not. It can be shown, well, I cannot show it, but the deep learning book states that this value of this so-called TD fixed point is at most 1 over 1 minus gamma times worse than the real minimum. But note that for, I don't know, for the gammas which are being used, so large gammas are nice, then this can be a factor of 100 easily, which means this is very impractical. Or like the bound is very weak, actually. When we, I want to find this image. I will return to the algorithm later. For example, here you can see where the TD will converge for our 1,000 random walk, right? That's the one where we use the Monte Carlo and state aggregations in 10 groups of 100. And this blue line is, that's where the TD will converge to. And you can see that these values compared to the real ones are really off. However, that's what the TD actually does. So we will use the temporal difference quite a lot. So actually, this is another problematic part where the convergence might not be guaranteed. Nevertheless, if we accept that we cannot prove that it converges, and that even if it converges, it converges to a different value than we would hope to, then apart from it, we can use n-step methods, like I've just destroyed everything, and now I'm saying, we can do it in an n-step method, yeah, so we can. I don't know any guarantees in case we are using an n-step method, but using n-step method is just the same as we did it before. And the effect of using different number of n's is quite similar as it had been until now. So for this state aggregated random walk, there is some reasonable number of n for which the value is the error is the lowest, and generally it's somewhere in between, right? So n one is on the one border and very large n is on the other, and then something like 2, 4, 8 is a good good estimate or a good compromise for the model which will learn as fast as possible. Yeah, so up until now it was all just about estimation, just policy evaluation. But we can naturally extend it to the full control algorithm. So we can formulate SARSA in this setting. Once again, we will start estimating the action value functions instead of just the value functions. But the update will be still the same. We will update the Q, right? We will try to minimize the mean square value error. So it's not called value error. I think it's still called mean square value error. But instead of computing the mean square error of the value function of the states, we will compute the action value functions of the state action pairs. That's straightforward. Maybe we can write it down. So what we are minimizing in this case is the value error. Therefore, given weights, we will consider the states from the on-policy distribution and actions from the policy distribution, and the value which we are trying to minimize is just the squared error. So it's the real Q pi SA minus Q hat SAW squared, like this. Well, maybe it would be better to square it inside squared, right? So this is what we are going to minimize, which means the natural update rule is this one. which is the semi-gradient version of this. So we are not really backpropagating through this value, which we use as the estimate, even if it is somehow biased estimate. And like the reason why this doesn't converge to the optimum is that this estimate is biased, right? The way how we assume the environment will behave is not a real, it's not a real unbiased estimate. In Monte Carlo, this is an unbiased estimate, so that's fine. But we need to pay a large price for this to be unbiased. We need to simulate the rest of the episode. So here in the TD methods, we just use our current model to do the estimates, but it's biased. And this biasness, this fact that we share the weights between these two values, that's the reason why it doesn't converge to the real minimum. Right. If instead we used some unbiased estimate for this site, then once again this would be SGD method. People actually didn't realize this for quite a long time, and we will see some implementation later today of people who actually realized this. Yeah, we can do this n step. It's really just the same as before. Yeah, then there are some images showing that it actually works, that it can work faster when like this is just a demonstration showing that using function approximation we can still make the algorithm work for the mountain car. They use the tile encoding with 8 overlapping tiles, so that we still remember things for specific positions and velocities, right? And here you can see what the estimate looks like after some number of time, and generally they want this, and there is this path through this terrain here showing you how to get to the target, or maybe I should do it like this, right? Yeah, that's not really informative that much. Yeah, using more tiles is better, blah, blah, blah. So generally, we can just use our TD algorithms. However, know that they are not even guaranteed to converge in the linear functional approximation. Let me maybe switch the light on. Oh, yeah, I think it can be. Yeah, the camera has adapted nicely. So, are there any questions? Nope, everybody is too tired. So let me destroy the last pieces of hope that things will converge, and then let's just put away all these negative proofs, and instead let's show something which will actually work. So before we get to some real world models, let's discuss another possible of divergence. This time, I want to show you that off-policy learning with function approximation can actually diverge. That will be unfortunate because we want to use function approximation. We want to be able to use off-policy methods, but it can go haywire. So before we illustrate the full proof, so let's start with some simple example. Imagine that we have got two states, this one and this one. There is a transition in the MDP dynamics between them. And the function approximation, let's say that we just use the linear function approximation, and the value of this state is just W, and the value of this state is two W's. Now, what will happen? Initially, let's say that this W is 10, for example. That means that if we do, and let's say that there is just a plus zero reward. So imagine that we were in this state and then we performed this transition. Now, what does the TD error look like? Well, the TD error is the reward, which we just saw, which is plus zero, plus the expected return in this state, which is 20, right? Minus the estimate in this state. So I'm just thinking gamma is 1, but it doesn't really matter. Minus the estimate in this state, which is just 10. Right? This is like this is the R plus gamma of V ST plus 1 minus V of ST. So the error is large. The error is 10. So it means we are going to update this value here. For example, if the running rate is 0.1, then the V will be increased by 10%. So V will be increased to 11. And here comes the problem, right? If we increase V to 11, we have automatically increased the value in this state to 22, because we are sharing the weight between these two states. And this can actually continue indefinitely. So we can, like whenever we go through this transition, we increase the value estimate in this state, which by itself increase the value estimate in this state, so that this feedback will still keep going. And this is really just a short feedback loop, and the values of the W1s can go like in increase. It will really diverge to plus infinity. Now, it's obvious what the function approximation is doing there, right? It's sharing one weight. So updating one state will increase the value of some other state, which will then, using temporal difference, be used when learning this thing, right? If we used Monte Carlo, then this wouldn't happen, because this TD error in this state, it wouldn't be just automatically two times this weight, right? Instead, we would just simulate the episode and sum the rewards. So it would not happen that it would be systematically overinflated. So that's one thing. If we used Monte Carlo instead of TD, then it would be fine. If we used on policy, then it would also work. Because if we use on policy algorithm, then after we have updated this state, we will also need to update the value function in this state. So this temporal difference, it will just continue until it will, let's say it's an episodic task. So let's say it will continue until it will end at some point in the future, right? And if it ends at some point in the future, then it will update the value estimates by like seeing the rest of the episode. So even if this update inflates the value function in this state, the on policy behavior makes it go low again, because whenever we see a real next step or even the real end of the episode, well, we will realize that this is like an overinflated, we have overestimated our value function, so that it will go down. And that happens when we use this on policy behavior. But when we use the off policy behavior, then it can happen that we will just, I don't know how to make the like conditions reasonable. We can just stop the episode here. For example, if the behavior policy does something different than the target policy, then we will just disregard the rest of the episode, so that this overinflated value estimation in this state will not be corrected, and this feedback loop can actually happen, right? So for the divergence to happen, all three things must be true. We must be using functional approximation. We must be using bootstrapping, so TD methods, not Monte Carlo. And we must be using off-policy training. And this triple is called the deadly triad in the Sutton and Bartos book. So you can sometimes see this name somewhere. And now this was just a vague example. So let's construct something like specific, a full MDP, where when we run the algorithms, they really diverge. And this is the so-called Baird counterexample. The idea is still very similar to before. So We have a linear function approximation. You can see how we represent the individual states. We have got V1, W1 to W7 for each of these states, but then the crucial part will be the W8. The W8 is added to all of these, and two times as much is added to this state, right? So this is the V goes to 2V part. And now you can see that some of these lines are solid and some of these are dashed. The target policy takes only the solid line. So the target policy starts in one of these states, then it goes here deterministically, and then it stays here deterministically. All the rewards are zero everywhere, so all the value functions should be zero. However, we have a behavior policy, and the behavior policy wants to actually follow the dashed lines. So let's say that the dashed lines are the exploration part of the behavior, and the probability of those dashed lines are very high, 6/7, the solid is just 1/7, right? So when we are here, the target policy always stays here, while the behavior policy stays only with probability of 1/7, and with the rest of probability it goes like it goes everywhere, like, so in the behavior policy just goes uniformly to any other state. And that's exactly what we need, right? In the when we look at the states, we will just see this jumps from this state to one of the six above here, instead of staying in the states forever, because staying here in the state and just going around would make this V8 to go to zero, right? Because we are seeing with for this discount factor, it will really get us to zero. Because the behavior policy is so exploratory, it will just jump too frequently to the up states. And whenever we go through this edge, it will increase the estimates too much. So if you then implement the semi-gradient of policy SARSA, then this is what will happen. You can see that the weight of W8 seems to be increasing exponentially. And if you continue for some more steps, it would still continue to increase. And this divergence, it's not really caused by the randomness in SARSA. It's not like we are in a bad luck and sampling bad actions or something. Even if you like take the dynamic programming, the algorithm where you move with the full knowledge of the environment, right? This is like one step of the Bellman update. Even if you do this and implement this off policy semi-gradient dynamic programming, like when you know anything about the update, you can see that it still diverges. So the divergence is not caused by the randomness of the algorithm. It's caused by the fact that actually these methods do not converge when the deadly triad is in effect. So that's another sad thing. However, to the more happier note, even if what I've just said is truth, or I at least hope that it's true, and I believe that it's true, people were able to learn to train models that all these theorems and observations indicated that would not be possible. And the very influential model, one of the very famous ones are the deep Q networks. So the deep Q networks were first described by the preprint on archive in 2013 by the group of the DeepMind scientists led by the Mnich and many others. And it was really very interesting, and I would say breakthrough paper, such a good one that they submitted it later to Nature as the human level control through deep reinforcement learning. And what does it do? Generally, it's an off policy Q learning algorithm with a convolutional neural network, function approximation of action value function. So there are really a lot of terms which we have talked until now, and I could just say this is it, and we could go away, right? You know most of all these things, right? It's soft policy. Well, you know what that means. It's Q learning. Well, we have seen Q learning. We use convolutional neural network function approximation. So for a given state, we do the function approximation of the action value function, right, of Q using some convolutional neural network. So that should be it. However, it uses all of these three things. The folded literal is in effect, right? We are using of policy and functional approximation and its temporal difference. And the training can actually be brittle. And before this, I would say that people didn't really believe that it would be possible to train it. But it was. So how does it look like? The guys tried to solve the Atari environment using this DeepQ network. So in the Atari environment, what you do is you get the image of the screen. It's, I don't really remember, yes, 210 times 160 pixels, not much. They have color values, and what you have is a joystick, right? So it's this is really a good visualization of what the joysticks look like for the console. By the way, all the games are from Atari 2600 console. That's probably too old for you, but I actually had a pirate copy at home, like the ones which didn't really use the original programs, but some other companies were then generating similar consoles, so actually had one at home. And then you have this joystick, right? It can move in nine directions, which are indicated here, like either it stands in the middle, and there are like two axes, how do you say this? There are like buttons in two axes, right, so there is, you can like physically hear that it clicks. So if you go enough to the right, there is a micro spinach there. I don't know how to say micro switch inside, which like clicks when you go a bit too much to the right or to the left, and the same forward and the same backward. And so there are like four of them, and you cannot push the left and the right one at the same time, of course, right? So there are just nine possible directions, and you can also press a button. There was just one button. And so what does the model look like? What does the function approximation look like? Well, the idea is to estimate the Q as A with the given weights. However, it's not like we get the states and the actions all at the beginning. Because when we want to define a policy, when we want to behave in some given state, we need to compute the QSA for all the A's, right? So how does the network look like? It gets state at the beginning, and then it generates this vector of A's, like the vector of Q of action value functions for all the actions, right? So our network, it gets a state, and then it generates this QSA on the output. Because the input is just the image, then we'll use some number of convolutions. Well, two layers of convolutions, then one fully connected layer. And then in the end, we will try to estimate this Q value functions. So we just generate as many outputs as actions, which means 18, without any activation function, right? We can just predict any real number. Some technical details. The small images, which did contain some color, are even converted to grayscale and then just resized to even smaller input. Well, this was in 2013. It's still very far, like quite long in the past. So people didn't really have GPUs at home to be able to like process very large images. So they really made sure that things were small enough. Then in the Atari environment, there were like 60 frames per second. That's what the console generated on the TV signal. But using performing 60 decisions per second seem to be too much for training and for computation reasons. So the authors used something called frame skipping technique. So only every fourth frame is considered, and then the selected actions is repeated for the other three frames, right? So what they are doing is they are doing decisions 15 times per second, right? And the input to the network are last four frames, considering only the skipped ones. So I don't know if these are all the real frames, then this is the input, and this is the input, and this is these things would be the input. So you can consider the input image to have four channels, where these four channels actually correspond to different time steps. Why this is so? Well, we are using this MDP definition. So we need the state to actually describe the full state of the environment. But our state is just the image on the screen, and it does not actually capture the full information. And the full information would be everything until now, but that would of course be too much. But there are the things can be moving. I don't know, there can be a shark here, right, with big teeth, and maybe it has moved a bit in the time steps, and we would like to know it. Like my shark has a nice dangerous looking teeth, so you know which way it is facing. But for some objects, you probably might not know whether it was moved to the left or to the right. And I know you are playing pinball, and you have got a ball, right? And when you have just one image, you can just see it standing somewhere, but it's probably moving. Knowing its velocity would be fine. So what the authors use is they use these four last time steps. Right. In a sense, they change their environment to be like four order Markovian things. So they actually like depend on the four previous states, not just on one. And that's what they get by repeating this by using multiple images from the past. There were some tricky things in some of these environments. For example, in the pinball one, things were blinking with the periodicity of two frames or something. So some things would be invisible. So they had to work around it a bit somehow, but generally this is what they do. Now the network is reasonably straightforward. Some number of convolutional filters. You can see that there are not really many of them. And the filters weren't that large, so that it doesn't really have huge capacity, this network, definitely compared to things like ResNets and larger convolutional neural network. It was very modest, I would say. And then there is this output layer on the end. So how does it work? We will train the model, this Q estimate, by minimize the mean square value error loss. So how does it look like? Well, there is this one step estimate of the expected return. So, okay, let's start here. Let's say that we have seen one state, an action sampled to some behavior policy, and we saw the reward and we saw the next state. So we sample this, and the loss is just the estimate of the Q value function in this state and action. And so that's just the reward plus the maximum of the Q functions in the next state. So this is just the Q learning thing, right? And there is this important thing that the S prime must not be terminal, right? When the episode has just ended with S prime being the end of the episode, then we don't actually need to consider what would happen in the next state. The next state is just the terminal one, and we need to not include this part, right? That's an important thing because otherwise your model could say, okay, I think things will be still pretty good in this state. But because the episode has ended, you cannot continue on. You will get just a zero, even if your estimate would say you would get high values, right? So explicitly we need to do this. So even if it seems we are just getting the SAR and S, we also need the information whether the episode has ended, whether we are done. The epsilon greedy behavior is used. It starts at the very high, well, actually it starts at completely uniform behavior, and it gradually decreases to 0.1 in I don't know, first, in the first 20% of training. So we really do huge exploration at the beginning. We are not really hoping to train much, but we will get a better estimate of what's happening if we are just doing random actions, so that once we start doing something, we will be actually able to select reasonably. Now, as I said, this, well, may not even converge or something. So what to do to improve the situation? First thing is that the authors utilized something which has been called experience replay since. It means that the generated episodes are stored in the buffer. So it's not like we are immediately learning on the episodes which we generate. Instead, we save the experience the experience episodes to the buffer, and then we trained on the data from the buffer. So why is this important, right? Instead of really training on the game which is being played, we train on some random step from the past. So first thing, this is an off-policy training, actually, because our behavior in the past can easily be, and probably was, different than the current one. So even if we just use the same policy, like we always use this epsilon greedy policy to generate the samples, we did it in the past where our Q value estimates were different. So during the training, actually, our behavior changes. So the further in the past we take the experience from, probably the larger the difference will be between the behavior and the target policy. Well, Q-learning is an off-policy algorithm which does not require any important sampling ratio, so we can do it. And the important thing is that if you have neural networks, you know that they undergo something called catastrophic forgetting. Like, imagine that, I don't know, you are playing Space Invaders, right? And now you have the right, they are the enemies who just go round and round, and you try to hit them. Now the one episode can take very many steps, and if you just train on whatever you are experiencing, then all these states could be very, very similar to each other, right? During one episode, the states do not need to cover the whole space. Instead, they cover just with one episode, which can be very local on the space of all possible states. And if you do this with the neural networks, well, the neural networks tend to forget things which they haven't seen for a while. So we can easily make the model diverge by concentrating too much on one specific or one subset of states from the whole space. However, if you generate all experience to a buffer and then sample uniformly from the buffer, then each batch consists reasonably unbiased states from the whole space. While if you instead take one episode, right, and then just use some number of states as the batch, then these states, they are not independent, right? They are from the same episode. They are probably very highly correlated, and that's what the neural network would not survive, right? So the experience replay was an important thing because it allows the model to see states uniformly distributed or reasonably uniformly distributed from the whole on-policy distribution, right? Instead of just seeing some local part of the episode, we can see a very wild, very different states. Also, this can make the model to be a bit more data efficient because we could train multiple times for a given sample, right? We might, I don't know, generate 5 steps and then train on 10 of them, and that's what happens. So you can even like train more than just once from a given sample. So that's one thing. Experience replay helped with the instability of the neural networks. And then we need a way to get around of this off-policy divergence. This off-policy divergence, similarly to the reason why the methods are semi-gradient, is that we share the weights between the two, let me put it differently. We use these Q-value estimates in two ways. First, we use it to describe the behavior, to describe the policy, like as the targets, as the values which our network predicts. But we also use them as the target values, as the estimates which we use to compute the expected return of the episode. Let me maybe show you this part. Yep. So these are these two usages, right? This one, which is what the model actually thinks, and then this is what we use to estimate the goodness of the next state. And the fact that these weights are shared, that's the problem, right? That's what makes this method to be semi-gradient. Assume that this would not be W, but instead a different set of parameters V. Well, then this would easily be just SGD. Because, well, the parameters W are only here and only here, so this is an obvious instance of an SGD algorithm where this estimate is unbiased, hopefully, because this set of weights doesn't really depend on this W. And the same it is with this Baird counterexample, right? What's bad is that when we take the estimate of this value and the prediction for this state, that they have something in common. And in the deep Q network, what they did is that they like they have broken this feedback loop by using the separate target network phi ahead. So you can see that actually here they use a different set of weights than the ones which they trained. So instead of having one, they have actually two networks or two set of weights. And one is being used which is being trained. And that's being used also to describe the behavior of the policy pi. And then there is a target network, and the target network is used for estimating the expected return from the next state, right? And they are like kind of independent, and this kind of independence will make the training much more stable. And by saying kind of independent, what I mean, well, the weights of the target networks, they are not really trained, but instead they are copied from the train network once in a while. So normally we only update these parameters, but each 10,000 steps, we just take these values and copy them to the target network. So there is still some non-trivial dependence between them, but it's very slow. If you consider all these, if you consider this off-policy divergence, needs to update immediately the target weights, right? It changes the W, and it needs the targets to be immediately larger. So if there is some inflation, you need to have this feedback loop where you use this inflated value as the estimate, which will increase the Ws, and it goes forth and forth. If you do this copying only 1,000 steps, then all this feedback loop which we have had cannot like be repeated every step. It can be repeated only every 10,000 steps, which means that's too slow to actually cause some instability, right? So there is, of course, some sweet spot here. If this is too large, then the training is too slow. If this is too slow, then the instabilities can happen. So you need to find something in between. Well, and the authors, they used 10,000. Also, the authors, they still trained a game for each separate, like a network for each separate game, but they wanted one set of hyperparameters. And so, and in order to be able to actually do it, they needed to do something with the rewards, because the rewards in some games are in hundreds, and the rewards in some games are really 5 or 10 or something. So these widely different ranges would call for different hyperparameters probably, but they didn't want to do it. So what they did is they clipped all the rewards to +1 and all the negative to -1, right? So the only thing with the environment says whether something is good or bad. It cannot say something is better than something else. And this, of course, meant the algorithm, or the trained agents weren't as good as possible, and people have overcome it since, but that's what they did here at the beginning. Also, if there are explicit lives in the environment, then they are used as the end of episode. Otherwise, it's difficult to say what value should a loss of the life be. So what they do, well, for the environments which have the lives, they just consider the episode until the first life loss, and that's it. You cannot train anymore once you have died. Also, to make the training more stable, they actually use the Huber loss or the smooth L1 loss, which means whenever you are training, this value is actually clipped to this -1, 1 range. Once again, this is for stability of the training. And that's it, actually, right? When you pull in all these things, like this experience replay, use the off-policy-ness of the algorithms to allow us to sample the states really from the whole on-policy distribution, one good thing. The separate target network was able to overcome the instabilities in the training, which is caused by the interaction between the estimation of returns and the current behavior. And the reward clipping was able to make the reward, like, this wouldn't need to be done if there was just one game, but because you want the same architecture for multiple games, then this makes them more similar to each other. This is the technically the same algorithm. It's really there. This is like the epsilon greediness of the behavior policy. Then you perform the step. Then you store the transition in the buffer, and then you sample the batch. Here you compute the estimated return, either just by the reward or by also looking at the next state using the target network. Then you do the SGD update, and every C steps you copy the weights from the trained network to the target network. Yeah, that's really it. These are the results. So for many games, they were able to get above a human, to get at the human level or above. These are the below human standard. This 100, that's the human level, right? And they also have this gray area, gray bars, which were the best linear learner they could have found until that moment. And of course, the blue one is the expected return of their network. So how much time do I have? Not much. Oh, I've already went past the deadline. So let me just wrap it up quickly. One thing is evaluation. So what does these values actually show? Well, once the agent is trained, it's evaluated on episodes, which can take up to 5 minutes. So even if during training we are doing discounting, we are not doing discounting in the final evaluation. It's a bit funny, but During evaluation, we just leave the computer to play for 5 minutes. And also, because the environment is actually deterministic and the network is deterministic, then you just get one way through the episode. So what the authors used, they used some number of no ops. That's how they call it. So they try 30 different episodes, and in each episode starts by a different number of the agent not doing anything, right? So this is what they use. They use 30 different initial states of some number of time steps not in which the agent doesn't perform anything. This allows the agent to be evaluated on at least 30 different settings. Still, these are extremely similar, so it may be possible that the agent is not, it cannot handle different situation than these 30 ones, but that's what they did in the first paper. We will see some improvement on this front later. There are some illustrations in the paper which shows the value estimate for the current state. Whenever like the brick is dropped, you can see that there is like a sharp peak. The same for the two. Now, when the ball is starting to really get to get to the top part, you can see that the expectation of the rewards comes up, because the network has already learned that a good strategy is actually to get here, because then multiple breaks will actually be broken. Right, the network returns the action value function. So for each action, it tells you what the expected return is. So there is a pong game here. And here, the ball is coming here, and we still have a lot of time to react. So all these three actions, go up, down, or do nothing, have reasonably good estimates. When the ball is getting closer to the line, you can and the players start moving up, you can see that the network sees that only going up is a good thing, right? It's probable that I will lose, I will do nothing or go down. However, and this can get even more pronounced, but if I still use up, I will probably make it. And then you can see that, well, after the ball has passed the enemy, then independently on what we do, we will just get a point. This is the last slide I will talk about. This is actually a very important one. These are all the hyperparameters which they used. So the mini batch used is 32. So we train on 32 images. Well, why not? The replay buffer has some size. It's 1 million states. So we train actually for 50 million frames. Yes, it's a lot. But we only remember the last million states, so that after, like, the thing is, the behavior of our agent changes. So off-policy correction can somehow deal with the different behavior and target policies, but the closer they are together, the better, right? So we are only remembering the last million steps, so that we can adapt to the change in our policy, and we only keep the most similar 1 million, sorry, steps. Yeah, this is the frequency of updating the target network. We use the discount factor. We use the discount factor during training because stability. Right? We know that for the continuing tasks, we needed this discount factor to be less than one to prove actually convergence. Right? So we use it during training, even if we don't use it during evaluation. During evaluation, we want just to sum the rewards. But if we use discount factor of one during training, it may not converge. RMS prop is being used because there are the convolutions there. So I think also this is pre-ADAM, so they couldn't actually use ADAM. This is the policy of the epsilon. So we start with one, end with 10% in first 1 million steps. So I said it wrong. In first 2%, right, of the training, we do like extremely high exploration, and then with just 10%. We start training when the replay buffer has at least 50,000 transition, and this is the number of different states for evaluation. Yep. So these are the deep Q networks. We will start with some function approximation on the practicals. Yes, there are no practicals because there is a state holiday on Wednesday. So that means there will be assignments and I will record the video describing them, which will be available on Thursday. And if you need something else, then you will need to contact me through Piazza or write me or something. So thank you for your attention. I'm sorry I needed more of your time again. So thank you for giving it to me. Enjoy the week, enjoy the free Wednesday, enjoy the competition assignment. And if you still have some questions, then please by all means ask. I will be here until somebody wants to actually ask something. But if you don't want to, then definitely feel free to leave. Thank you for your attention and see you. Bye.